Good morrow!
I'm Beverly Jean.
I'm Allison Powell.
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding. It's been a long time, you guys. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, welcome back to the fireside.
Hear you again.
This week, we're talking about Measure for Measure.
A dark comedy. So, in case you didn't get to read it, I will tell you the plot in some Shakespeare abridged. Vincentio, the Duke of Vienna, who pretty much is just labeled as the Duke for the rest of the place. You don't really need to know his name. But he comes up to his friend and kind of right-hand man, Angelo, and he's like, hey, I'm going on vacation. I'm going to go do some political stuff in another place. And now you're going to act as the Duke for this whole town. And Angelo's like, are you sure you don't want to like give me a test first? And he's like, nope, goodbye. And he goes off. On the streets of Vienna, we see some of the rabble, and we learn that the Duke is going off to maybe make peace with the King of Hungary, and there's all this jokes made by these people being like, soldiers never wish for peace, so even though it would probably be best, we can never really hope for it. And then they start making jokes about venereal diseases, and Mistress Overdone and Pompey come in, the local bawds, or woman who runs the whorehouse and whore, and they are talking about this guy named Claudio, who's just been arrested by Angelo's newfound power and forces for getting this woman, Juliet, pregnant. Now, Claudio and Juliet had sex before they were married, which is the problem and against the law. And the only reason they know is because Juliet is now pregnant. Now, they had sex before they were married, not out of baseness or vileness, but because Claudio plans to marry Julia and they're literally just waiting for like a money transfer because dowries are a thing, and basically they just didn't wait for that transfer to go through Wells Fargo, and boom,
did you Venmo me?
She pregnant. This will all be solved by Venmo in the next century. So Claudio is then let out with the police officers and they all see him. He's like, yo, Lucio, who's this guy who often goes to the whorehouse and is kind of, I think they describe him as a fantastic in my character descriptions, but he's just this guy that is amongst the people but also kind of rich. And he goes, hey, Lucio, go get my sister Isabella. She's about to be sworn in as a nun, but I need you to go talk to her before she is, and then bring her to try and convince the new Angelo, who's in power, to release me from this, because it was not done out of malice or anything like that. So he goes off to do that. We see Isabella at the nunnery, meaning an actual nunnery, not a whorehouse. She is talking to another nun there, who's telling her all of the things that she'll have to give up to become a nun. She can't talk to men unless her face is covered, and she has to be in the presence of another priest or something to be able to talk to men, and she'll only have simple pleasures. And Isabella's like, that's great. I'm so excited to devote my life to God. I can't wait to take part in this. This is all I've ever wanted. Then, before she's sworn in, Lucio comes in. He's like, yo, your brother needs your help. Can you come help convince the Duke to not kill him? He got a woman pregnant. And she goes, oh, is it my cousin Juliet? And he's like, yes. And she's like, but they're in love and they're going to get married. He's like, I know. And apparently it's against the law for her to be pregnant. She's like, okay, well, I'll go talk to the Duke. And then we see the Duke, who actually didn't leave the city, and he disguises himself as a friar with the help of one other friar. And he's like, oh, now I'll get to see Angelo's true, heart and soul. And also, I made the city full of whorehouses and drugs and stuff by not being really harsh on people, because I just kind of want to have fun. So hopefully Angelo can fix that so I don't have to, and then people will still love me, because I just love to have fun, and I love my people, and I want to take care of them, but I kind of messed up. And then he, like, runs off. So he's going to basically, like, Jasmine and Aladdin it and walk amongst the people. So then we see Isabella go to Angelo, and with a little prompting from Lucio to really try to convince Angelo, we see that Isabella is this amazing orator and is so pious and true and is just begging for her brother's life and offering Angelo prayers in payment for her brother's life and for mercy. And Angelo says, no, the law is the law. If this were my brother, I would still commit him to death. Because he basically said, like, oh, he's going to be executed at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. And Isabella's just begging for mercy. And Angela was unflinching the whole time, and right as Isabel is about to leave, he goes, well, why don't you come visit me tomorrow and talk to me about this again, and we'll see what happens. And then Isabel leaves, and Angelo turns to the audience and has a soliloquy, and he's like, oh my god, I'm in love with her. She's so hot. I have to have her. And he's, like, torn because he knows it's wrong to, like, lust after this woman who all she wants to do is be a nun and, like, be pious, but he can't turn away his feelings. So he's like, I must have her. So we see some more stuff with Pompey, and he gets arrested by this guy, Elbow, who's really mad, who's like a sheriff, very akin to the sheriff in Much Ado About Nothing. He's very much a farcical clown who's not very smart. And Elbow is like, my wife has been at this whorehouse all the time, and now I'm gonna arrest him for it. And Pompey convinces him that he's just a tapster or a bartender. And so he is released, but basically the provost is like, oh, but you gotta watch out. We'll be watching you from now on. He's like, okay, whatever. And he runs away. And then we see Isabella come to the Duke the next day, and the Duke basically propositions her and says, well, if you want to save your brother, you need to give me your virginal body. If you sleep with me and do the same sin that your brother did, then I will release him and keep him and let him go free and show him mercy. And Isabella's like, what? No, I can't. And she talks about how saving one brother's life here is not worth eternal damnation forever for her. And Angelo is like, no, this is the only way to save him. And she says, well, I'm not going to do it. And I'm going to tell everyone that you asked me to do this, and then you're going to be in trouble. And he goes, who would believe you? I am the most well-known, pious person in town. No one's going to think that that's real, and everyone's just going to think that you're trying to save your brother. And she's like, oh my God. And he leaves her. And she has this beautiful speech about it. And she's like, no one's going to believe me, so I'm just going to go prepare my brother for his death. And so she goes to her brother in the jail, and there, the Duke is talking to the brother, disguised. The Duke is disguised as a friar while talking to her brother. She comes in and she says to her brother, this is what happened. Angelo tried to make me have sex with him, and I'm not going to do it, so I'm really sorry, but you are going to have to die, so prepare yourself with this friar for death. And her brother's like, well, what if you did it, though? And he says, like, I'm sure, like, God would forgive your sin because you're doing it for the right cause. Like, you'll be able to save me. And she's like, how could you possibly ask me to do that? And she's so mad at him. He's like, you're right. I'm sorry. Death is a very scary thing. Another beautiful speech. And then he goes to prepare himself for death. The Duke, overhearing all this, disguised as the friar, comes in and he goes, hey, so I heard everything. Sorry about that. But I think I can help. There's this girl, Mariana, who's supposed to marry the Angelo, and he didn't marry her because her dowry got shipwrecked in the ocean. Dude, Venmo, again. And if we just get her to go in your place and have sex with Angelo and trick Angelo into thinking that he's having sex with you, then he'll release your brother. You'll still be a virgin. Mariana will then have cause to be married to him, and he can't escape it, and everything will be happy. And Isabella's like, that's really cool, and you're really cool and fun, huh? And then hashtag feels. So they talk to Mariana about it, and she says she's a little wary, but she's like, friar, if you as a holy man ask me to do this, then I'm sure it's right. Just kind of messed up, because that's actually the Duke, not a holy man at all. But anyway, he convinces Mariana to do it. Mariana goes to have sex with Angelo in Isabella's place. Angelo is, like, blindfolded and whatever, doesn't know that it's not Isabella.
Some kinky stuff.
While this is all happening, we're seen at the jail, and we hear that Claudio is supposed to be executed, and this guy Barnardine is supposed to be executed, who's just this joke part, who just basically walks around the jail, not in a cage. He walks around, does whatever he wants, and the jailers pretend to bring him to be executed all the time, and he's, like, not scared of death. He's just kind of whatever about it, and they think it's really strange. So they finally have orders to kill him, and the Duke, dressed as the friar, is waiting there, and he's like, oh boy, can't wait to get that paper that says Claudio is not to be executed. And then he gets paper, and it says, from Angelo. No matter what you hear, Claudio and Barnadine still need to be executed. And the Duke is, like, so upset. And he's just like, I can't believe this is happening. So he quickly works out a plan with the provost and decides, we'll just kill Barnadine. Because the Angelo specifically asked to see Claudio's head to make sure it's done. And so he says, we'll just kill Barnadine instead, since he's already supposed to die this afternoon. We'll cut off his head and we'll mess up his face and shave his hair and tie his beard up so it's not Claudio, because they don't look like it, alike at all. Barnadine walks up the stairs or whatever, kind of has a funny moment, then he's like, I'm too drunk to die, God won't take me because I'm sinning right now, so I'll see you later after a nap. And they're like, okay. And the Duke feels bad because he's like, it would be a sin to kill someone when they're not ready for death and send them to hell just to fix a problem that he had nothing to do with. And then the jailer's like, oh yeah, I forgot though. There was this other guy that died that looked like Claudio, like a whole lot. We still have the body. Do you want me to send that head? And the Duke is like, yes. Yes, please. So they send that head and everything's great. So Angela thinks Claudio's dead. Claudio's not dead. And the Duke, for whatever reason, is like, you know what? I'm not going to tell Isabella that her brother didn't die because I think she'll be happier if she experiences this pain first. So Isabella comes in. She goes, oh, our plan went great. Angelo and Mariana had sex and he thought it was me. And the Duke's like, unfortunately, though, your brother is now immortal and is dead and he's in heaven. And she's like, what? I can't believe this. I can't believe this happened. And the Duke is like, I know, me either. It's crazy. So listen, what I'm going to do is I have to go home real quick. You should meet Angelo at the front of the town because I heard the Duke is coming back pretty soon and he's going to meet Angelo in the front of the town to just hear if anything bad happened while he was gone, just in case anybody has any complaints. And Isabella is like, oh, that sounds great. By the way, you're looking kind of cute. But she doesn't really say that, but it's implied. And then the next day, Angelo has gotten word that the Duke is coming. He's supposed to bring all the lords that have any pull in the town, and they're just going to have an open forum in case anybody has any complaints. The Duke comes in. No one recognizes him as the friar that had been disguised the whole time, and Isabella shows up as prompted by the Duke, and she says everything that happened. At first, she says that she slept with Angelo, though. And the Angelo's like, I don't, how can you believe this girl? She's clearly meth. Like, I would never do something like that. And Isabella was told to bring a friar with her. And the friar's like, actually, she's really honest. And the guy she's talking about, this other friar that's not here right now, he's really honest too. And Angelo's like, where is this mysterious friar? And then there's this other thing I forgot to even mention. What's his name? Lucio, while the Duke was disguised as a friar, talked real mad, mean things about the Duke, and he's like, yeah, don't worry, friar, who's actually the Duke, I know that the Duke really well, and he's actually like a really bad guy. And the Duke is like, uh-huh, okay, we'll have payment for that. So at this big meeting, Lucio's like, oh yeah, that friar, he's the worst, I heard him talking smack about the Duke. And the Duke looks at him like, you what, mate? And the Duke is like, well, I guess we'll have to find this friar. I gotta go inside for a bit. Angelo, can you deal with the rest of this? And Angelo's like, you got it, boss. Gives him a little salute. And then the Duke quickly changes into the friar. And he comes back with his hood on. He's like, I'm here. What's going on? And they tell him everything. He's like, oh yeah, Isabella's totally right. Angelo totally did this. But actually, Angelo didn't even sleep with her. He slept with this woman, Mariana, who he should have been betrothed to years ago. And they're like, what? You crazy. And Lucio's like, oh, you bad. I remember you smack-talking the Duke. And he's like, oh, yeah? And then Lucio's like, why don't you show your face? And he takes his hood off and he sees that it's the Duke. And he's like, oh, no. This is going to be bad. And the Duke is like, yeah, why don't you go stand in the corner? So anyway, I knew everything. Angelo, you're a bad person. You need to marry Mariana right now. They go off stage. They get married. They come back. And the Duke is like, all right, I'm going to kill you, Angelo. Sorry, Mariana, but at least now you'll die an honest, or you'll be a widower and an honest woman instead of just a punk who had sex before she was married. Instead, you just had sex with your husband. And she's like, oh my God, no, don't kill him. I love him. Poor Mariana. She's just like, he's my everything. I love him. Please, you have to be merciful to him. And the Duke is like, no, he's done so many bad things. And Mariana looks at Isabella and she's like, please beg for his life. Isabella, knowing this man killed her brother, decides that mercy is more important and gets on her knees and begs for mercy for Angelo. And the Duke is so moved. He gives the mercy and he says, Angelo, you will not die, but watch it, punk. And then Mariana and him are happy. And then he goes, oh, by the way, there was this other guy in jail that looked just like Claudio. Oh, it's crazy. Anyway, here he comes, and Claudio walks out. And he's like, and this is for you, Juliet, a husband who would be just as honorable as Claudio. And Juliet's like, oh my god, this is great, thank you. And then he goes, and also, Isabella, if you'll have me, I would love to marry you. And she doesn't answer, so it's implied that maybe she does, but maybe she doesn't. And that's the end.
Oh, lordy.
I love it.
What a play. I'm so happy for our guest today, though. It's going to bring everything up. Literally.
Ooh. Ooh. Double entendre from Allison.
Ew, well, I said it, and then I realized, so I went with it.
Oh, okay, cool. Today we have Mistress Overdone with us.
Ooh, it's such an honor to be here today.
Wow, what a play.
What a play. Here are my thoughts. I have a lot of feelings.
Yeah, go ahead.
Number one, I feel like this is the play that has too many plots. This is a play where it's
what?
Like...
What?
You need to cool it. Because they're pointless. Like you were saying earlier.
Right.
There's a lot that like doesn't...
You're right.
Pan out. It doesn't lead anywhere.
There's no B plot. It's an A plot and a ZXY plot.
Exactly. Like in Twelfth Night or something where you have like different people dressing up as other people or whatever, but you have like this other pair of lovers or you have this other guy who's just trying to get his money or whatever. Like you have that. In this one, there's just a lot of random plots. So it's not my favorite. Also, of course, it's not aged super well because Isabella is... perfect and wonderful and amazing, and that's all. And Juliet and Mariana just love their men, and that's all. Like, they're not as three-dimensional as some of Shakespeare's other female characters, I feel.
I disagree with Isabella.
Being
not
one-dimensional?
Three-dimensional, yeah.
She has some really great speeches and some really great moments, but I don't know.
Ooh, I think she's one of the most three-dimensional characters there are, though. And awesome. I think Measure for Measure has aged quite well and is quite poignant for today, if you really think about it.
Well, share your thoughts,
well,
please.
Well, if you think about it, it's a lot about it is corruption coming from the top,
mm-hmm.
which is happening today.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not as bad, but still, if you really think about it, it's still not the best. And they are punishing other people that... with doing what they're actually doing
they're
themselves,
doing.
Which is happening today.
Hypocritical.
And sex work today is being punished in this play, and it's punished still today, when all we want is decriminalization, which was what the Duke really was doing.
It's true.
He decriminalized it, which is what everyone wants.
Yeah. Free love.
Free love. No glove, no love, though.
Oh, yeah.
I believe in protection.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
In my age.
Keep your ladies safe.
Yes, yes. Get all the bits in place and all that stuff. All that jazz. Ooh, the Chicago reference. You never know with me. You never know.
Mm. What a worldly Mistress Overdone.
I try. I try. I succeed.
Well, you've lived this long,
so. It's true. It's true. It's true. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to completely argue with you about it, but I just love this play. Originally, it was called Mistress for Mistress, but then all that shit started to hit the fan, so they had to change it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I had a lot more dialogue earlier on, but they had to cut it for time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For time.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, I think Isabella is pious, and that's, like, the thing they harp on the most, but in the end, she's an adventurer. Like, she was ready to give her life to this nunnery, but in veering off course to go save her brother, she found her voice in the same way that Viola does in Men's Weeds. She finds her voice, and she finds her power, and then she finds friendship with the Duke and maybe love. She never acts for anyone but what she thinks is right. And I don't think that's about one-dimensional. I think that's about being a hero.
And I
that's
think,
fair.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no.
And I also think Shakespeare, you wrote, always tells you everything that's going on in the play. And the fact that Isabella doesn't answer to me, if she has a positive feeling, I'm pretty sure she would answer. Mm-hmm. That's just my interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because they spell it all out.
So, did they get married?
I think it's an awkward situation.
Oh, yeah.
The Duke wants to marry you. It's like if the president comes up to you and it's like, hey, I want some time alone with you. It's hard to say no.
Right.
Because you don't want to go to jail or whatever they decide to do.
Right.
So I was thinking that she's like, well, I'm not going to say no, but I'm not going to say yes either, because I kind of want to be a nun.
Yeah.
I don't want no man in my life.
Yeah.
And I hear you, sister. Oof. I hear you.
Men.
The worst.
You've seen a lot of men.
Oh, I've seen a lot of men in my time. Let me
nine
just tell.
Husbands.
Yes, exactly.
Before you were overdone.
You, oh.
Sorry.
Overdone, never over easy, I always say. I always say.
Always over hard.
Ooh. We're having a lot of fun today. Me and my ladies.
Yes, ladies' day. Here.
Yes, it is.
Nice. I love it. I love it. I don't really have any questions.
Great.
Because
we saw this
because we saw production and it does help so much. I think if I read this play, I'd be
really
majorly
upset.
Confused.
I agree.
I am really upset because the other thing that I think would help this play, or if I were to stage a modern production of it or any production of it, I would heavily edit the final act. There's a lot more back and forth with the Duke than there needs to be. I don't know if he, like, gets off on dressing up as other people and, like, making crazy plots.
I know I do. It's true. Sorry,
but,
keep going. I acquiesce. I don't digress. I ascend.
But it's just too much. Like, you think that the play's about to be over, but then there's 20 more minutes of trying to sort everything out. And I think that's what I mean, too, when there's too much plot.
Act 5 is one scene. It's one long scene.
Yeah.
You're right.
And
I agree with you.
It's too much. And the Duke should have just right then been like, actually, I dressed up as the friar, ha ha ha, and explained it all right there.
Well,
why does
he
run back and forth so much?
Is he's giving Angelo a chance to confess. And to be absolved of what he did by apologizing.
Okay.
He's giving him every opportunity, because he gave him the power to see what he did, but also because he needed him to fix a problem that the Duke made.
Yes.
But, and then, when he was trying to solve the problem, he solved the problem, he gave Angelo what he wanted, and he still ordered Claudio to death, and he's like, oh man, I gave him another opportunity to just let this go, and it didn't work. And then he's like, I'll give him one more chance. I'll put him in front of everyone important and see if he can confess and ask for forgiveness.
Looking for honesty in politics. Those choices. Choices, Lodewijk.
I like this play. I think Isabella's great. I love Claudio's stuff, too, because I love that he's like, well, why can't you just have sex with him? Like, come on, I'm gonna die.
I also think that speech he gives in the jail scene is one of the most famous ones, and I think it rivals To Be or Not to Be.
I would agree.
Put it, it's those are one and two.
His is more action-oriented,
because
I feel like Hamlet's just, like, philosophizing, and he's like, well, like, I might die, too. And Claudio's like, I'm staring death in the face. I'm seeing a way out. Even though it's so wrong for me to take that way out, I still want you to, and what does that mean for humanity?
Mm-hmm. Goosebumps.
There are some really good speeches and monologues and some really engaging scenes that, again, I just think it's too long.
Surrounded by crap, I guess. Surrounded by a lot of crap. All right, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And it's an interesting one that it's not a tragedy, because nobody does really die except this random pirate guy who died of a
magazine.
Of a natural death, we assume. But it's not really a comedy. It's very Coen Brothers.
I also think, I think there's like, it's like, yes, I think very Coen Brothers, a little Twin Peaky, where it's like very serious, and like the comedy comes from like how serious this thing is, and everyone's taking it so dramatically. And like, I think the ending is also supposed to be very funny, and that's why it's so long. Like, oh look, he keeps switching back and forth, and they have yet to figure it out, a bunch of dumbasses.
Yeah, that's true.
The one thing I was going to bring up is the Duke saying, you know, there was somebody in the jail who looks so much like Claudio, even though Claudio's dead, and then brings out Claudio, it is kind of similar to It's Much Ado About Nothing, right?
Mm-hmm. Where
it's the same idea.
Plot, even Hermione, almost. In Winter's Tale.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It's definitely the same plot device. It's absolving someone of their sins by rebirthing them.
I think an updated version could work. It definitely could be a modern day.
Oh, well, I think all Shakespeare needs to be a little modern, because what's the point if we're just doing it just to be, just
not
to do
all
it.
Shakespeare works that way, though.
Well, a modern interesting. Then I always say, why this audience today?
Taming, you can't do.
I don't think Taming of the Shrew, I'm going on record, Taming of the Shrew should never be done. The end.
Merchant of Venice.
Merchant of Venice is... You have to make Shylock very sympathetic. He's not a villain. Say what you want. I'm on his side.
All's well that ends well.
It's not always well that ends well. That play, the title's a lie.
What was that one play that I said was such garbage?
Henry VIII?
Yes. Yeah. Henry VIII should not be done.
Awesome.
Throw it in the trash.
I'm going to be honest, I haven't read that one.
It's such garbage.
I like Henry IV, part 1, 2, and 3.
Part 1's my favorite.
It's there like,
good old Hal. I'm trying to think of other important things that we need to touch on this.
I just want to hear more about your life.
Oh, no. Do you really?
So,
Vienna, before and after.
So, yeah, Vienna was loosey-goosey.
It was.
You had a bod house in the suburbs.
Yes.
Not a city bod house.
Mm-hmm. No, we are a family-oriented brothel. A whole house by today's standards. We called it a brothel back in the day.
This chicken,
or
there's chicken tenders on the kids' menu.
Ooh, yes,
there's
yes.
a kids' menu
we have
kitchen.
A nanny. There's a babysitting station. Don't worry, go do your thing, mom or dad. Ooh.
Or both.
Ooh, some group therapy.
Swingers.
Family therapy at the friendly neighborhood whorehouse.
Yes.
No, yes, it was... This time.
Would
this,
you say it's the best little whorehouse in Texas?
Oh, and
in
Vienna. The best little whorehouse in Vienna. Well, that would be a fun... We should have done that playback. It wasn't written yet. But if it was, we would have done a great production. A lot of performers...
Do you have any sex advice?
Oh, me? Sex advice? Oh, it's been a while, let me tell you.
Ooh.
It's been a while, because, you know, I've decided to be a little bit celibate, because I had my fun time. But sex advice, always make sure you're nice and clean. I think it's important for the lady and the gentleman. Wash your balls, gentlemen. Oh, sorry.
You can say balls.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure. I always talk about balls, so I wasn't sure if I was allowed to talk about them today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, make sure those are nice and clean. Boys don't focus on that enough, let me just tell you. Women, know your worth. Know your worth, women. Don't always have to sleep with every man involved. It's true.
What's your favorite cocktail?
My favorite cocktail? I like a cosmopolitan. That's actual factual. Not actual, craptual. Yes.
See, it's a complicated plot, but it's
so fun.
We're riddled with brilliant characters.
Like a venereal disease of comedy.
Oh, I love venereal diseases. Oh, I'm sorry, did you say venereal disease? I'm
yes.
sorry, I thought you said something completely different. I'm so sorry.
What did you think I said?
Venereal disease. I got you all.
We do have a lot of clowns in this play. Lucio is kind of like the quick-witted clown.
Yeah.
Making fun of the Duke in front of him. Elbow is the dumb clown who's the sheriff of the town. Pompey is like the smart slave kind of trope, the low-class person who outwits authority.
Never speaks in verse. Trash person,
mm-hmm. but still smart. And then Mistress Overdone, of course, who tells it like it is. She's very much a Mariah, in Twelfth Night.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Also, it's so funny that he wants to go talk to the King of Hungary. Why, Shakespeare, do you not say the King of Denmark? That'd be such a fun reference.
Wouldn't it be fun if they connected all the plays? Mm-hmm.
That'd be cute.
Oh my goodness.
Some like Tarantino red apple cigarettes type stuff.
Oh, I always say, don't you have to do Shakespeare as if it's a Tarantino film.
I think it'd be great. Always. That's my dream.
Kill Bill Volume 1, more like Measure for Measure Volume 1.
You could have gone with Henry the Fourth Part 1.
That's much that was a much better reference than what I was making. Yeah, my brain is going.
Are there modern-day adaptations, or you wanted to make
Oh, yes, yes, there is a modern-day... Not everyone believes this, but I think Fifty Shades of Grey is a modern adaptation because he is blindfolded, Angelo. And it's as if Christian Grey is actually Isabella, and he is actually, but the doughy-eyed girl, I don't remember.
What's her name?
Samantha. What is it? Is
that Anastasia? That's covered.
Anastasia. Oh yes, I just feel like it's the closest version of that because, like Shakespeare, it's a lot of sex in that play, Measure for Measure, and there's a lot of sex in Fifty Shades of Grey. So I'm just
saying.
What are we measuring?
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Measure for Measure is actually a reference to a Bible verse.
Yes,
that's what I heard.
I'm just saying,
you're ruining my dick joke.
I just want to be a nun.
Ooh.
I'm Isabella.
Yes. But I think that is fun, like, get thee to a nunnery, and she's actually at a real nunnery.
I know, like, while there's, like, a whorehouse plot.
Exactly. It's very confusing.
Just to catch everyone up, the Hamlet reference where he says, get thee to a nunnery, to Ophelia, is actually a reference to saying to Ophelia, get you to a whorehouse, like, you slut.
Exactly.
And, because he's playing madness.
That's not confusing.
Yeah, he's playing madness, a couple other things at that moment. That's why he says that to her. So, it's kind of funny that that was a common thing to just be
It's going to be my new insult to people when people piss me off. I'm just going to be like, get thee to a nunnery.
I think it's bite my thumb at you is what I do. I do a little Romeo and Juliet action for people.
But are there any real modern day adaptations?
Yeah, no. I don't believe so. How do you adapt this?
I think
it's a mess.
I think this has a little bit too much to do with religious specifics to really put it into a modern day adaptation, because much of it depends on fearing God.
Yeah.
Which is kind of...
which we all do.
What I wanted to talk about today for our, like, historical aspect.
Please.
I just kind of touched on, because this is such, like, a deep theory and everything, but about what Shakespeare's religious situation was. And I wanted to look into what the religious sort of aspects of this play, because so much of this depends on Christianity. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I found really interesting that someone wrote was Shakespeare is not, in his plays at least, regardless of what he writes in his real life, his plays are not specific to one religion, because we hear about pagan gods in all the Roman ones, which makes sense because that's what the Romans would have done. But he also has those, like, theories of mysticism with, like, Midsummer, there's fairies and stuff, and Tempest, there's magic, and then there's the witches in Macker's, and all those could be considered part of Christianity, but they're not really sold as such. And even in Tempest, they talk about pagan gods, because there's, like, the goddess of the rainbow from the Greeks and everything in that scene with the wedding scene and the Tempest. But what this person mentioned was he always brings in Christian religion and makes it important to the plot when the characters have to worry about what would happen to them after they die. So that's what you see with Hamlet, that's what you see with Macker's, because those are acts of betrayal or of sin or something like that.
It's a good point.
Yeah, and something I never really considered, that he almost uses religion when he needs it. Because you don't hear anything about it unless you like it, which we haven't read yet, or Twelfth Night or anything like that, because it doesn't really matter. It's not even like... it's even though, like, maybe they would think dressing as a man and, like, a man falling in love with another man might be a sin at that time, it's never mentioned because it doesn't matter to the characters. Like, the characters just know that they're in love. It's not like they're considering whether to kill their father's murderer and whether that's right or not. Stuff like that. And I was curious about Shakespeare's religion because I'm currently watching that TNT show Will about his early life. It's a fictionalized version. I might do a podcast about it. I might not. It's already canceled, so it's sort of
3-episode podcast.
It would be like a 120-minute episode podcast, but...
Worth it!
I have a lot of feelings on it, but I got into it finally. But they talk about... They name Shakespeare as a Catholic in that show, and they play it as that he's a secret Catholic. Because at the time, Catholicism was illegal, and people were being tortured and murdered for it. And basically, it was like treason to be a Catholic. And so I did a little research into that, and there are theories that Shakespeare was a Catholic. One of the biggest things that happened is in 2014, they found another, like, first folio, like, edition of Shakespeare plays, and it was at a Jesuit university, which points to him maybe having some more ties to the Catholic faith. Also, his mother's relative was killed for being a Catholic spy. Whether he actually was or whether they just killed him for it is up in the air. So there's some theories that he might have been a Catholic. There's some theories that he might have been a Protestant because that was kind of what was happening at the time. Basically, Shakespeare was big and like a character on the scene of theater when all of this religion was just being put up into question, and what the right Christianity was in question.
A lot of turmoil.
It was kind of the start of people turning away from religion and being atheists. Christopher Marlowe was running around being an atheist the whole time, and his whole play Faustus is about someone making a deal with the devil and God never interceding or helping him at all, and sort of an exploration of that. And so Marlowe and Shakespeare were known to be like cohorts and buddies, so they might have talked about that. And also Marlowe apparently was openly gay back then, which I didn't know. That's crazy. There's the question of, was Shakespeare an atheist? Which I never even thought of, and I was like, oh, because that one of the things people say to like sort of suggest that is Shakespeare is so interested in what happens now, and even though his characters fear what happens after their death and that's a big part of their action, Shakespeare is more concerned with how they act, and I think that's really telling. And he never presumes to show gods or show like God's hand, and even barely any religious figure speaks to God directly. I think the only time we see that is Hermione with the like seer in Winter's Tale. Like they kind of talk to the fates, I guess, but it's not like any pope or religious figure is always like, no, the gods really told me this is what you should do. They just fear what the gods would think, which is a very atheist kind of human way to take it. And with his speech where he says, like, I really don't want to die, and I am having this fear, and it's going into, I can't remember the words of it, it's beautiful though, where he's like, it's going into darkness, and it might be freezing cold, it might be hot, or I might just wander the earth forever. I don't know. I think it's really interesting. Yeah. So that's it.
Sweet.
I love that.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
I learned.
I know.
Yay!
All this fun and learning. Oh, best podcast ever.
Mistress Overdone. So yeah, no films as far as I know. No film versions.
I believe it.
But yeah, if you can find a local production of it, I think it's worth seeing. I think it can be done really well. The production we saw was with the Independent Shakespeare Company in LA, and they do really good work.
Yeah.
And it was so well cast. The people were just right for their parts. And then
a really good production, yeah.
Yeah. And then we got to see Two Gentlemen of Verona, which Allison loves, with an amazing cast. And they made it a musical, basically.
It was so good.
Sort of like a pre-concept. They want to do like this Shakespeare musical that the director, who also played the friar in this one, is working on. It's really excellent.
Is there an adaptation of Two Gentlemen of Verona?
We found out something, that there was like a musical.
Yes.
In the 70s or 80s.
Yes.
So let's read a scene.
Let's do it!
So this is from Act 1, Scene 2, and this is right in the beginning. This is the first time we see Mistress Overdone and Pompey, and they're all just finding out that Claudio got Juliet pregnant and has been arrested for it.
Yes.
Wah, wah.
I'll play Mistress Overdone, because it's me.
Pompey.
How now? What's the news with you?
Yonder man is carried to prison.
Well, what has he done?
A woman.
But what's his offense?
Groping for trouts in a peculiar river.
What is there a maid with child by him?
No, but there's a woman with maid by him. You have not heard of the proclamation, have you?
What proclamation, man?
All houses of resort in the suburbs of Vienna must be plucked down.
And what shall become of those in the city?
They shall stand for seed. They've gone down too. That a wise burglar put in for them.
But shall all houses of resort in the suburbs be pulled down?
To the ground, mistress.
Why, here's a chance indeed in the Commonwealth. What shall become of me?
Come, fear ye not, you. Good counselors lack no clients. Though you change your place, you need not change your trade. I'll be your tapster still. Courage! There will be pity taken on you. You that have worn your eyes almost out in the service, you will be considered.
What's to do here, Thomas Tapster? Let's withdraw.
Beautiful.
Are they mailing my Oscar?
Yes!
Good.
It's in the mail!
Good. UPS?
Yes.
Amazon's gonna overnight deliver it.
Oh, I trust Amazon more than I do the local post office. Oh, let me just tell you.
That's real.
Hard to find my Dollar Shave Club, get it there in time. For my legs!
I was gonna say,
for my legs.
For your legs, yes. For your legs, yes. It's for men and women.
It really is.
It really is.
It really is.
Great! Well, thank you so much for coming and visiting with us.
Oh, thank you for
having
me. It was
such a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it was a pleasure to be with both of you.
Oh!
I'm Beverly Jean.
I'm Allison Powell.
Deuces, peasants! Get out of here.
We had Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, I think I have to leave now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Ooh, you have the vapors.
Oh, I have the vapors. Oh, I just flooded my basement. I'm sorry if any children are listening to that.
No one is listening.